Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by howtolicenseyourmusic.com. If you're interested in learning how to make money licensing your music into television shows, video games, commercials, advertisements, and more, visit howtolicenseyourmusic.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Michael Landy from a company called Music Orange. Michael, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Nice to be here.
Thanks for doing this, Michael. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. So let's tell people a little bit about your company. When did you found Music Orange? How long have you been in business?
Well, as Music Orange, we've been in business since 2002, and Music Orange kind of developed out of another company called Hank Smith Music, which was around before that, and we do original music, and we have our own in-house library, and we provide music for advertising, so TV commercials, radio commercials, you know, corporate video, websites, you know, basically anything that's marketing.
Yeah, very cool. So how did you sort of, you know, I'm really interested in the niche of advertising. It seems like a really interesting niche within the niche. Sorry, is it niche or niche? I've always heard this pronounced two different ways. And yesterday I was listening to a podcast and the guy was pronouncing it niche. So I've sort of settled on that pronunciation, but I'm interested in the niche of advertising because it seems like a really interesting sort of subset of licensing. I know there's potentially good money in it. How did you sort of end up focusing on advertising?
Well, it kind of was a long road that just kind of happenstance and kind of just taking opportunities as they came that kind of put me there. I mean, I guess when I graduated from college, I had a music degree. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I'd write music for films, but I lived in the Bay Area, which is not a great place to do that. So I thought maybe, well, I could do, I don't know, documentary films or art films or things like that. Of course, I was also in a band and thought maybe that we'd become famous or something like that. I got an internship at a recording studio and started doing a little bit of composing there. And through that, I met another composer who taught me how to score well to picture, and he was doing a lot of corporate film. And at the time, this was in the mid 90s, and there was a lot of corporate film happening. I started getting kind of some experience doing that. I moved to Kansas for my wife, so she could get her master's degree there. And so I had no, you know, nothing to do. So I set up shop and said I'm in business. And there's a lot of companies up there I started working for, and some spots, but again, a lot of corporate film and, you know, maybe some short film, stuff like that. And when I moved back to the Bay Area, the idea of starting over again from scratch and trying to get clients was a little daunting. So I called every advertising company in town and asked if anybody needed a full-time composer. And of course, nobody did. Mm-hmm. But one company, Hank Smith Music, started hiring me as a freelancer. And after a couple, I started doing a lot of work with them, and after a couple of years became a partner there. Then there was some personnel changes there. We met up with our current partner, Hector Perez, who was from working with another jingle company, and we formed Music Orange.
Cool. So it sounds like, I mean, people always ask me, like, how do you get started in the advertising world? So it sounds like in your case, you just cold called different advertising agencies and found one that you developed a relationship with. Is that pretty much how it worked?
Yeah, that is how it worked. Just different companies. Yeah, it just took a long time and a lot of cold calling, and you know, you kind of find one opportunity, do that for a while, and keep your eyes open for the next opportunity, and just kind of slowly move up. That was the way I did it. You know, it's funny, I've talked to different people about this. How did you get to be where you are? And it's funny that everybody's experience is completely different. One of the guys I formed the company with, he's actually retired now, but Blaze, you know, his story was he was hitchhiking on the Golden Gate Bridge and Hal Reiney picked him up.
Oh, cool.
So, and said, you know, oh, you're a musician. Okay. Well, send me your stuff. I'll give you a job. And, you know, just, you never know where opportunities are going to happen. So it's really just kind of being, you know, persevering and, assuming you can write, you know, you have to be able to write music, but other than that, just persevering and calling people and being available for opportunities that happen and taking opportunities that come up. And, you know, hopefully that you'll find a path to success that way. And I feel like if you persevere and you have talent, that it may take long or maybe quick. You don't know how that's going to happen, but you know, you'll be able to do it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting and challenging things about the music industry is that there isn't really one path. Like you said, there isn't a formula per se. But what I hear sort of unanimously in all the stories I hear from different people like you, Michael, is this idea of building relationships and networking and connecting with the right people. How has that evolved over the years? And what are your relationships like now? Are you working with a variety of different agencies? What is your sort of day-to-day life like?
Yeah, well, we've been around long enough that we have, you know, we don't have a huge name in the industry, but people know who we are. And so we do get lots of people we've never worked with for new jobs, licensing, things like that. But our core clientele are certainly people we've worked with, and they, you know, they come to us again and again and again. And, you know, we've slowly built that group of people up over the years, and that's, you know, kept us in business. So yeah, and like we just did a job for a company, an in-house company, and you know, they got our name from the editor they were working with, who said, oh, this editor recommended you guys, he said you guys were great, he's edited jobs that you've worked on in the past. So you know, if you do a good job, hopefully, yeah, people are recommending you out there and getting the word out.
Yeah, I'm sure the word spreads if you do good work. And by the way, I want to sort of like mention to people, I probably should have mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, but you've done a ton of advertising work, and I want to tell people a few of the places and a few of the different companies you've worked with. There's a lot of them, but just to mention a few: Hewlett Packard, The Home Depot, Kellogg's, KFC, Kodak, Macy's, McDonald's, Microsoft, NFL, Nickelodeon, Sesame Street, Taco Bell. There's a really long list, and you guys can go to Michael's website. It's musicorange.com and learn more about all the different companies that you've worked with. But you were saying, Michael, that Music Orange is essentially yourself and one other main composer, and then you have a few other people it sounds like you work with from time to time, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, it was three of us for the longest time. One of the guys retired, and so it's been two of us, Hector Perez, and we've been it's just been mainly the two of us for the past 4 or 5 years. And then yeah, we do have a group of composers that do give us pieces for our library from time to time, and occasionally do an original music job for us.
Cool. And can you, let's talk a little bit about like what the different types of projects you work on are like. Are these all, I'm assuming at this point, because you're working with so many different companies, that you're writing for very specific, is this custom stuff you're writing on request, or do you have a large catalog that you pitch to different projects when it's relevant to do so?
Yeah, at both. So oh. On one end, we have our own in-house library that, you know, we do some advertising for, and it's not huge. It's maybe about 1,000 songs, and mm-hmm. That's on our website. So sometimes people call and just say, hey, we want to use this song for the spot, and that's that. On the other end, there's original music jobs where, and that could be for Probably the most, you know, the two predominant types of jobs are TV and radio spots or web films or, you know, web spots. They're kind of these 1.5 to 2.5 minute films about a company that they'll put on their website or their social media. And that's probably the predominant kind of jobs for original music. And then in between, since we wrote all the tracks in our library or most of them, we can take tracks. Like sometimes people will want a track, but want to customize it for their particular film. So we are able to do, you know, so if it needs to be longer or it needs to grow in this one spot or it needs to, you know, the structure needs to change or anything like that, we can do that. And so we do quite a bit of that as well.
Very cool. And can you talk a little bit about what different types of placements pay? I know in advertising, there's, you know, like everybody talks about these really lucrative spots. There's national ad campaigns that pay $20K or $30K or on up. Can you talk about sort of what the average is for the different types of projects you work on?
Yeah, there's a really wide range, and it depends on, yeah, the use and what type of job it is, and, you know, also people's budgets, and that varies widely. So I'd say, you know, on the very low end, you know, it might be, you know, a few hundred bucks for a local radio spot that's playing for 13 weeks. And then, yeah, so on the upper end, if you're doing an original track for a national TV spot, or maybe there's a series of spots or, you know, a spot with several different versions, you know, that can be $25,000,
$30,000, $40,000. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty lucrative.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. Definitely.
Excellent. And how many, what's a typical year like for your company? Are you hundreds of placements, dozens? How does it normally sort of work out?
Yeah, I would say it's hundreds. I'd say low hundreds. You know, I feel like it's the easiest way for me to keep track of it is how many invoices we send out a year, and we send out a you know, 200 to 300 invoices a year, and so that's original and licensing. But each invoice can be several different placements.
Gotcha. And are you, for, let's say, for like a national ad campaign, let's say it's a commercial, for example, there's obviously a sync fee up front and there's a fee that you agree on to license the track. How does it work out in terms of performance royalties?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I hear, you know, I was listening to a couple of your podcasts and, mm-hmm. you know, when I hear people who are, you know, if you're a band or a songwriter and you're placing spots and you're trying to get, say, in a TV show or something like that, it seems like the sync fees are low and the performing rights royalties are high. For us, it's really the opposite. The vast majority of our income comes from creative fees and sync fees. You know, especially because, so for a national spot like that, it can really vary on what ASCAP pays, or BMI, or whoever you're with. It's hard to break down per spot when they give you these use, you know, when they pay your quarterly payments, you get this 60-page PDF of all the uses, mm-hmm. and it's hard to break down what one spot gets.
Yeah.
But it's in the several thousand to, you know, twice that kind of range for a spot. Maybe for a radio spot, it might be pennies, it might be nothing. So it's nice to get the PRO, but for at least kind of the stuff we do, most of it's sync fees and creative fees, especially because we do a lot of stuff that ends up on the internet, which gets no royalties. Mm-hmm. At least for now. Hopefully they'll change that.
That's interesting to me. I always assumed, I've done very little advertising work. I mean, it's definitely an industry that I'd like to be a bigger part of, but I've always assumed that for like a commercial, for example, that the performance royalties would be really substantial just due to the volume. You know, like there's certain commercials I've seen that are played over and over and over and over. Like I would think it would add up, but it sounds like it does, but maybe not as much as people would assume.
No, look, you know, they have a short lifespan.
Yeah.
So they get picked up, but there's not, you know, it doesn't go on year after year after year. Well, actually, that's interesting. We did one really low budget commercial maybe 15 years ago, and they're still playing the spot. And, you know, so every time we get an ASCAP check, that thing's still on there. And so for stuff like that, it really can, you know, can add up. But in general, things, you know, they play for their 13 weeks or however many cycles they play, and then they go away, and that's the end of that one.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Let's shift gears. Let me ask you another question, Michael. So I'm doing a course in the next month or two with a guy who's doing more TV work, but he's making a really good living as a TV composer. And one of the things I'm trying to do with my website and my courses and my podcast is really give people listening to this like a really sort of clear picture of what this business is like. And one of the questions I ask pretty much everybody who comes on my podcast is this idea of, can you do licensing as a career? And I mean, it's obvious to me that you are looking at your clients and listening to how much these different spots pay. I get a lot of people answer this question very differently. And it seems like the consensus among supervisors and music libraries is that you can, but it's really hard. And there's very few people. Like somebody I interviewed a couple months ago told me there's probably only 20 people in the country that make a full-time living licensing music, but yet I keep finding people that obviously are. So this is a long-winded way of asking you, what is your take on doing this as a career? How viable is it to build this up to a substantial revenue stream, which it sounds like you have?
Yeah, it is hard. And I guess that, you know, there's the way we did it, which is, you know, doing original music and, you know, coming as composers as opposed to trying to marketing our music that we do, that we would do anyway, you know, or as a band or songwriter.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, you know, when we started doing what we're doing, no one was doing that. You know, this was in the mid 90s. So, it was actually kind of frowned down upon that, you know, bands wouldn't want to be in a spot. It felt like selling out or something like that. And certainly it's completely come the exact opposite.
This right.
is, now it's a viable way. It's one of the only good ways to kind of, or it's an excellent way to get your music out there and get some recognition. So I mostly know it from, you know, opening a music house. And I definitely think it's possible. There's always people that need music. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to get started. It's one of these things that once you get started and get going, it's not that hard to sustain, but it's very difficult to start out, and it can take a long time. But you know, there's the slow way, which is how I did it, which was I just said, okay, I'm in business. And you know, that took years and years and years. You know, maybe if you're doing, you know, doing, as working as a subcontractor for a bigger music house, that's a good way to get started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just starting out and you're open to any opportunities, I think even working at an ad agency or a production company is not a bad idea, because those are the people that you're there at ground zero when people are looking for music. And, you know, perhaps you say, hey, I got some music, I can write music. And someone will say, yeah, okay, why don't you try it?
Yeah.
You know, it's actually probably a great place to be for getting an opportunity. And I think once you have opportunities and you do, you deliver the goods and people are happy with what you've done, it's gets easier and easier to get the next job and the next job.
Right. Once you kind of get the ball rolling, things sort of snowball. But in the beginning, there's a pretty big barrier to entry. How long? So you started in the mid 90s. How long did it take you until you reached a point where you could live off the income you were making from licensing?
Well, I'd say if you count like the year I said I'm in business, that was 1994, probably 4 to 5 years where I felt like, hey, this is actually, I'm making more than I'm spending.
Yeah.
Or I'm not student loans or something.
Yeah. And like 4 to 5 years, I don't know, to me in the grand scheme of things, it's not that, I mean, it's a long time and on one hand, but in terms of business, it's really not. And if you work hard for 4 to 5 years, I mean, I think it's going to take 4 to 5 years to do anything substantial in the music business. I mean, certainly if you're going to try to become a recording artist or a rock star, that's probably going to take at least 4 to 5 years unless you're super, super lucky. That makes sense. That seems realistic.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've always treated it like a job. You know, we keep regular hours. We go to work, you know, the 9 to 5 kind of thing. Well, maybe 10 to 5. But, you know, we show up to work every day. We answer the phone. We're always there. We answer all emails. You know, I think treating it like a job is important. And, you know, you got to be available for when people need things. And people, the turnaround time on the stuff we do can be extremely fast. You know, like if someone wants a music search, I'm assuming they need it in the next half hour. You know, it's not like, okay, I'll get you something tomorrow. You know, you want to get them music right away, because if they like something, maybe they'll stop looking.
Yeah.
You know, they like yours. And also, I think people appreciate that. They kind of look, oh, I'm going to call these guys again. I'm going to ask these guys next time I need music, because, you know, it's really easy. It comes really fast. So certainly, you know, treating it like a business and delivering on time or better than on time, I think that's important to success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody that I know who does this well, who's succeeding in this industry, works really, really hard. And yeah, that's one of the things I emphasize to all my clients. I was in LA a couple of weeks ago, and I had a chance to meet this a student of mine, someone who went through, I don't know if you know this, Michael, but I teach courses on music licensing, and I have different courses on my website. And so I met this kind of former student of mine who's doing really, really well. This guy, Eddie Gray, we're actually going to do a course together about how to be a TV composer. He's like one of the main composers for Born This Way on A&E and several different shows. But the point is, when I got a chance to actually meet him in person and see his workflow and his schedule, I mean, this guy's up at like 4 or 5 o'clock every morning, really, really hustling. So that's something I don't think a lot of people realize. That like, they don't see sort of the behind the scenes of what it's like to do this, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I think especially for film and TV, that there's a lot of music and they're quick turnarounds. I have to say, one thing about the advertising world is it's a lot saner than that.
Yeah.
You know, if we get hired for a spot, it's, you know, it might be, it's 30 seconds of music, or maybe it's 2.5 minutes of music, but it's not something, it's not like, I don't know how, you know, how many minutes for an episode this, you know, your friend, your student is doing, but, you know, maybe he's got a week to do 35 minutes of music. And, so I really like this. I really like that about the, advertising music world, is that it's actually quite sane.
Okay, that's cool. So it's not quite as daunting, maybe, because like you said, 10 to 5 isn't exactly, I mean, that's a pretty typical, even maybe a little bit less than like a typical workday for most people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can be, you know, it can be daunting. Just, you know, you get that job and you have a blank sheet of paper, or a blank computer screen, and you got to write some piece of music that day that's going to impress them and their clients and make everybody think this is the best piece of music ever. You know, it can be daunting that way, but yeah, in terms of time, it's solid and can be hectic at times, but in general is pretty sane.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me ask you another question, Michael. This is a little, perhaps more philosophical, but I'm just curious to hear your take on this. I mean, it sounds to me like when you started out, you were playing in bands and you wanted to kind of do the artist rock star thing. So what has the transition into doing something like this been like? Does this feel artistically satisfying to you?
Yeah, it does actually. Which is funny. I've never thought I would think that I remember the guitarist in my band. I always, in addition to being in the band, I have always liked recording just little song, weird, just whatever comes to mind, just experimentation. I had a four track cassette deck in high school and would just spend all my time in my room writing songs in all different styles, short things, you know. I did all sorts of different music in college. Studied cello for a little bit. I was in the percussion ensemble. I never really stuck to one instrument, so I've always kind of liked the experimental nature and of doing, just trying different things. which is kind of what my job is now. And anyway, the guitarist in the band said he heard something I wrote and said, oh, you should do something for, you should write music for commercials. And I remember the feeling of being so offended at that moment. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? I would never do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've really grown to like it. It can be very creative. Some of the spots you get to do, we just did a really cool spot for Clorox, and it's kind of this cool kind of retro alt Latin track. It can be very fun stylistically to do. And I like that it's a short little puzzle. You work on it, you get it, and then you move on to the next thing. So I actually do like that. I remember when playing with the band and feeling like, oh gosh, I got to play the same song night after night after night, again and again and again, practice it. I liked more of the just being alone in my studio, making up a thing and moving on to the next thing. So this has been perfect for me. I don't know that it's perfect for everybody, but.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It makes sense. I mean, I guess there's sort of pros and cons to both. Like, playing live is a lot of fun. I've always thought it's the most, like, one of the most exciting things about being a musician to me. But like you said, you tend to play a lot of the same material over and over. I mean, that can get stale as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have the exhilaration of playing in front of a live audience. That's true. Although, if you're doing this, you can. You have nights free, so you can still be in a band.
Yeah, you can still do both if you want to. Another question that I wanted to ask you, are you doing vocal music or instrumental or both?
Well, we're primarily, like, our library is 99% instrumental, and that's mostly what we do. Although we have seen a trend in the past couple of years that people are asking us more and more for vocal pieces, you know, where either they're writing lyrics and we're creating a song out of that, or they're even asking us to create lyrics. And that was something that didn't happen for a long time. And I suspect it's just the prevalence of band and songwriter pieces being used for so much advertising that it's become popular again to have singing in songs. Yeah. For a long time, nobody wanted singing in spots, unless it was a famous, doing a Rolling Stones song or something like that. That Clorox job we just did had singing in it, although that was wasn't words, but it was pretty prominent vocal piece. We just did something for LifeLock Radio that was all singing. Doing a new jingle for I Can Afford College, and so that's a song. So yeah, we're seeing a lot more of that.
Cool. And how do you handle that? Do you outsource? Do you hire outside vocalists, or do you guys sing?
Well, we do sing. You know, we're not perfect for everything. Singing is one of those things that's hard to fake. We can play a lot of instruments ourselves and what have you, and do different styles that way. But singing is, you sound like what you sound like. So we do some things ourselves, but usually we hire out. And we tend to use agencies that have vocalists, so there's one company we use a lot in New York, and they have vocalists in Nashville and New York and LA, and we'll use them. And so we just send them the music, they sing, send us their file back, we make comments, maybe they make changes, and then we mix it.
Is this an ad agency? What kind of agency?
It's like a talent agency, and they just represent, okay. They have a whole bunch of vocalists.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So you hook up with them and they refer you different vocalists and do everything remotely. Okay.
That's right, yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, Michael, this is awesome, man. This is really good stuff. Very insightful, and I'm sure people are going to get a lot out of this. What I'd like to do to close the podcast is, do you have a song, maybe something recent that you've been working on that we can play at the end of this to give people an idea of the kind of music you make?
Yeah, I'll send you a file.
Okay. Do you have any idea what it will be, so I can tell people? Otherwise, I can go in and edit it afterwards.
I have no idea what it would be. Okay. Well, how about the Clorox music?
I love it. Yeah. Since you talked about that. Okay. So this is a song that's been featured in a Clorox music commercial, right?
Yeah. It's airing now. It's still on the air.
Okay. What's the name of the track?
what is the name? Well, it doesn't have a name because it just was written for them.
Okay.
And I think the spot names are really generic, like bathroom, kitchen.
Okay.
So let's just call it kitchen.
I like it. This is Kitchen by Michael yes. Landy from Music Orange.
Hector Perez, actually, he's a composer on that one.
Okay, Hector Perez, that's your partner, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I should give you one that I wrote.
Yeah, or send me a couple. I can play, you know, if you want, I can play the one that you mentioned, since we already talked about that, and then I can play one of yours. We'll do two at the end.
All right, sounds good. And I have no idea what that'll be. I'll just have to surprise you.
Yeah, that's cool. So your website, let's tell everybody, is musicorange.com.
That's
and
right.
Michael, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Sure, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, likewise. Have a great day.
Okay, yep. You too. Bye-bye.
Take care.